The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
What's up, guys? It's the phenomenal AJ Styles. You're listening to the two-man power trip.
Hey, Johnny. Cool, man. What's going on? We ready to go or what?
Two-man power trip of wrestling. I'm your host, JP John Paz. With me today, very special guest, former NWA Florida Tag Team Champion, former WCW superstar. You may know him as Alan Iron Eagle. We know him as the Desperado, Joe Gomez. Joe, welcome to the Two-Man Power Trip. How you doing?
It's great to be here, John. Thanks for having me on your show.
Awesome to see you. What have you been up to?
Well, you know, I'm here in Tampa, Florida. I'm actually on the back porch. My daughter's in the office using the computer to do her homework, my little 12-year-old. So I've got a 12-year-old daughter, beautiful little girl named Presley. Several businesses here in the Bay Area, you know, in Tampa, that's keeping me busy. And we have a funding company called Florida Settlement Funding, pizza parlor called Palazzo Pizza. A lot of the boys have been by. And rental properties, we're doing development down here. So just keep it really busy, you know, and seeing a lot of my wrestling friends. Actually, this weekend, Flair and I, Rick and I, are going to go see Mongo, unfortunately, in Chicago. He's in the hospital again. So we're going to go see him. You know, he's been stricken with ALS, and it's absolutely terrible. So we're going to go try and raise some money up there for him. I think Eric Bischoff's coming, some of the other guys, and try to do some good for Mongo and his family.
Yeah, absolutely. It's absolutely terrible what's going on with him. ALS, just, oh, that is the worst. And it's crazy to think of him, you know what I mean? Like, huge Mongo, tough Mongo, the, you know, NFL almost Hall of Fame Mongo in that kind of shape and that condition. It's crazy.
Yeah, John, I'm going to add Mongo, who beat the living hell out of me in 96 at Bash of the Beach.
Yes.
Truly
yes.
A great
July
guy.
July 7th, yes. July 7th, 96. Yeah, he beat the hell out of you. Yeah.
Oof. Still got memories of that, but yeah, he's a dear friend, and it's probably the worst thing you could ever imagine, just seeing him now and, you know, seeing him helpless like that. But he's got a strong family around him and a lot of his friends, and it's amazing where the whole city of Chicago, the Bears ownership, McCaskey family, the firemen, the police, really everybody in the city has rallied around him to help him out. He's that beloved of a character there.
Yeah. Definitely. And it's funny, like you mentioned Bash of the Beach 96, him stiffing you a little bit. Was he just maybe a little too stiff in the ring? Was he just kind of, you know, was he just using his football, you know,
no,
strength?
Pa, you know everybody? We always, you know, rib each other about that. But no, you know what it is? He's just so strong. You know, you're talking about legit, I want to say he was a 500-pound bencher in his heyday. And like you said, you know, borderline legitimate Hall of Famer in the NFL, 140, 136 sacks, you know, part of the greatest probably defense in the history of football.
Yep.
And just one big tough Texan. So, you know, if you're trying to move him around the ring and he doesn't want to go, he ain't going to go. So, yeah, it was a pretty stiff one. But, you know, like I said, he's a dear friend. We had a couple other matches leading up to that as well. And I'll always remember it, and had a great time, and I was just happy to be there on such a history-making night.
How did you just get into WCW to begin with? Because I remember in the early 90s, you were there, obviously after Florida Championship Wrestling, or NWA
yes.
Florida, whatever you want to call it, but you were Alan Iron Eagle, so you were like an Indian character, and you know what I mean? Like, how did that happen? Because I guess that's really the Jim Herd era.
Yeah, well, actually, Ole Anderson hired me. And for some reason, Ole liked me. He was down scouting for talent in Florida. Mike Graham and I were Florida Tag Team Champions. And I had, Sean, I had 17 matches under my belt. And I was literally green as, you know what they say. And but I had a certain look. You know, I was a young, you know, I guess good-looking kid. And, you know, 6'3", in shape, you know, 240, 235. And they were looking for young talent. And WCW at that time, in 90, was going through a real rough phase, as you know. The house shows were horrible. The leadership was really spotty. At this point, Ole was the booker who had taken over from Dusty. And then Dusty subsequently took over for Ole again in, I believe, 91 when I was there. And they just hired me. You know, they said, kid, they gave me $1,000 a week. And, you know, and I remember calling Steve Kern, my trainer from the office, and said, should I sign? I don't think I'm ready. You know, I had 17 matches under my belt. He goes, heck yeah, you should sign. You never know if you get another opportunity again. You know, so I signed, went on the road, and got matched with the Master Blasters for the first 90 or 60 days, I think, on the road, which was Kevin Nash, who's still a friend, and Al Green, rest his soul, who's no longer with us. And that was pretty stiff, you know. Then I went from them to the Nasty Boys, and
oh god,
you know, it was yeah. it was a good education, but I had a lot of fun there. You know, I remember my parents gave me a gold AMX card and said, "All right, put all your you know expenses on here for the accountant and you know for your taxes." And I was making $52,000, which was great for a young kid. But Rick and Arn took me under their wing, and I traveled with the Horsemen that year, and I ended up spending like, I think $74,000 my first year in the business. Oh, it was horrible.
Wow.
You know, they understand. I'm with the Horsemen, Mom. You know, it was just, you know, your dreams come true, if you can imagine. So, and to this day, we're all still really, really, really close friends.
With that, though, why are you Alan Iron Eagle? Like, why are you an Indian character? Where did that
come
from?
You know, a funny story about that, because I truly am Native American.
Oh, okay.
Adopted, hence the surname Gomez. I was adopted by two lovely Cuban Spanish parents who have been gone a long time, but I could not have been a luckier man, and I thank God every day for that, for those people that adopted me and the friends that I've been fortunate enough to make through the years, and now my daughter, which is my only family. But it was kind of a rib on Ole, because you know his name is Alan. I'm not pronouncing it right. I know Rodgewitz. So Alan Iron Eagle, because Ole loved me. For some reason, he just liked this green kid who really had no business being in WCW at that time, and I'll be the first to say it. But I had potential, and I had athletic ability, no question, but I just wasn't polished enough. So he really liked me, and I guess there's a rib on him. The booking committee came up with Alan Iron Eagle, and they said I was a 19-year-old Indian from Netawaka, Kansas. And it actually got over a little bit, you know, because I was tagging with guys like Tom Zink, Brian Pillman, you know, God rest both their souls, the Rock and Roll Express, you know. So they were putting me with a lot of those guys to try to get the rub for me. And, you know, but back then the house show business was horrible. It was, you know, WCW Saturday night. There was no direction with the TV and anything. And, you know, subsequently, like 3 years later, it was when Eric came aboard, you know, 94. But the 90-91 was really, really tough business for WCW.
What do you think about Jim Herd? The pizza guy, Mr. Pizza. What do you think about Jim?
He was real tough. You know, he's the guy that wanted Ric Flair, as Kevin Sullivan said, because I would always be with Kevin and, you know, Rick and Arn, on the booking committee. And Kevin would say, yeah, because Herd wanted Rick to cut his hair like Spartacus, cut his hair short, and he was going to be named Spartacus, which prompted Rick to leave and go to WWF, I'm sorry, at the time. And Kevin Sullivan said, yeah, and why don't you just change Mickey Mantle's number? You know, so Herd was, you know, he was a Pizza Hut executive. I'm sure he was a really smart man in that realm, but he really wasn't suited for wrestling. You know, a lot of his decisions were really unpopular. He came up with the ideal of two guys that were hunchbacks. They couldn't get pinned because they had hunchbacks. This is real, by the way. And they were actual real hunchbacks, and they couldn't be pinned. It never came to fruition, but those were some of his ideas, you know, having Rick cut his hair and be Spartacus. And so that was really met with a lot of derision from the boys, and it wasn't a real popular time at all.
Yeah, I mean, the Ding Dong Spartacus.
That,
I mean,
he, Ding Dongs, yeah.
Yeah, he had some bad ideas. Yeah.
Oh, horrible, horrible. And yeah, it was real bad. It was a real bad time there. So subsequently, after my contract was up, and I wasn't ready for it. There was no way I was prepared at that time. And I was, you know, that first year running around with the horsemen. So I really wasn't spending a lot of time practicing like I should have. But I had a great time, made a lot of dear friends, and unfortunately, I had a death in the family. It was my mother. So I came home to be back here in Tampa with my dad, because that was all we each of us had. And so it was good. You know, my dad and I had a few good years together, 4 good years. He helped me open up my first business, which is a bar called Cherries in Ybor City. That was pretty infamous with all the boys, both WWE or WWF at the time, WCW, you know, with the localized promos. Flair would say, I'm going to be in Ybor City after the show and come on down to Cherry. So, you know, we'd have the best parties there. And Ybor City is a historic district of Tampa. And it was going through just this tremendous resurgence. And so I was fortunate enough to, you know, be in on that and open this bar restaurant called Cherry's. We had a 20-year run there and subsequently opened up another one called Sushi on 7th and a couple more after that. And that business has always been good for me. But, you know, then after my dad died in 95, you know, I was just here alone in Tampa. And Rick and Arn had stayed close with me. And actually, I spent 3 or 4 Christmases with them and their families after my parents died. You know, and they were, oh, Chief, you're coming here for a week. And, you know, Rick would have me at his home for a week. Arn would have me at his home. And, I can't tell you what that meant to a 24-year-old guy who was, you know, pretty much heartbroken when his idols, heroes, you know, took me under their wing, welcomed me to their home, his family. And that was really, really special for me. But they said, Chief, why don't you come back and, you know, come to work here in WCW? And I said, yeah, you know, give it a shot. And Eric had me come in for a tryout at, I did a match at Disney back when we were doing the, you know, the week long or 10 days at Disney.
Yep.
And he signed me. But at first I was going to do another take off on a Native American character. They actually hired a private detective to see if I was, because God, John, you're so good with this. Charlie Norris.
Yep.
He had sued WCW like the year before I came back and hit him for like $350 for discrimination.
Yeah, discrimination lawsuit. Yep.
Yeah, and he actually hit him pretty good. It might have been half of them, I'm not sure, but it was a pretty fair number. So they didn't really anticipate me doing that, but they wanted to make sure that if they were indeed going to push an Indian, he really was an Indian. So the good thing about that was I got to meet my biological mother in West Palm Beach, which was a trip. That's a whole other story. And so they came up with Desperado. I think that was Jimmy Hart's idea. Desperado Joe Gomez.
Love that.
So we kind of worked on that, and you know, it was hard. You know, I tagged up with Renegade and a lot of the guys, Disco, myself, who Disco was a tremendous talent, by the way, both mine for the business and work rate. But a lot of the guys, there was that glass ceiling there, because you know, there were so many guys there. There was Macho, the Steiners, and Hulkster, and you know, Nate, and the Horsemen. And so it was really hard if you were a young guy to kind of break through that ceiling during that time period. And obviously the formula worked, because Eric, you know, broke business records with WCW. But I don't think it worked for the long term, because there wasn't a lot of, aside from Goldberg, young talent that was developed, new talent. Just to be there in that time, you know, when we were number one and riding high, and those were heady times, and, you know, everybody was really, really positive. You know, it was an 83-week period where we beat WWE and WWF at the time. And so it was a great time to be there, without question. It was crazy just to see the crowds. It was like, you know, it was like traveling with Bon Jovi in their heyday, you know, just in terms of the crowds that would come out there. And we'd do a lot of college campuses, which was really smart. Zane was the event coordinator, and he would book us at a lot of the bigger colleges. So we'd get 25,000, 30,000 really worked up kids there. And it was tremendous for business.
Zane Breslov. Yeah, he's great. Did a great job with a lot of your venues and stuff.
Another guy WCW, going too, yeah. too young. Yeah. Yep. Zane was a good guy.
With that, like as far as Desperado, the gimmick, is it literally you're just Desperado Joe Gomez, Jimmy Hart? So the movie Desperado with Antonio Banderas, and that's the character?
Yeah, you know, I think so. You know, I mean, I'm, you know, very humble, but they would always say, you know, kid, you're a good looking kid. We want to do this with you, this with you, this with you. And subsequently, did a little, it didn't last too long with myself, Jim Powers, Renegade, another good friend gone too far too young, and Alex Wright. And I can't recall the name that they put us, but it was just, you know, some of the young guys. It was just an idea thrown out there by Jimmy to try to, you know, maybe get us closer to breaking the glass, you know, just try to get some of the guys over, a little rub, whatever you could. And Jimmy was always great with that, working with the underneath talent, you know, because he did the music, of course, and he was always coming up with ideas for us. And I'll always appreciate that for him. And, you know, to this day, kid, darling, I tell you, I told you, we could have made you a star. You know, and he's always just so complimentary and just such a positive person. Jimmy's always will be a very, very, very dear friend. And I appreciate everything he tried to do for me. Believe me, there was plenty of guys, you know, that tried to help me out. And, you know, for whatever reason, you know, I think a lot of it I have to blame myself because I was pulled. And Eric had said this. He and I did a panel not too long ago. And, you know, I had my hands in a lot of fires. But Eric was paying me good money to be a professional wrestler. But like he said, if you own a business, you live that business. You eat, you breathe. You know, because that business is, it's yours. You gave birth to it. And especially the bar restaurant business, it's really tough. A lot of hours. And, you know, and if you can't be there, you're always worrying about it. And, you know, I think I probably took bit off a little more than I could shoot if I was going to try to be a star for WCW.
Do you like the movie Desperado? Did you see the movie? Like, did you kind of resonate with the character?
Yeah. And I was trying to think of ideas and, you know, I wish I was as creative then as I am now, you know, maybe have a come out with a guitar case like him, maybe shoot smoke in the crowd or something like kind of Johnny B. Bat. I don't know. But yeah, and I tried to, I had the tights made like him with the, I believe they're called epaulettes or the bangles, you know, that hung off there and the boots with it. But, you know, it was just, it was a tough character for me to try to really, you know, because he had the guns and all that. And I don't play the guitar, which I wish I did. So it was kind of tough for me to carry over into the character. I see maybe some of the physical resemblance, you know, when I was younger, perhaps. But yeah, that was all Jimmy's idea. And, you know, he did some videos on it and it was well received. But, you know, I'm going to be the first one to say, you know, I was told Eric, I kind of felt I let him down because I didn't progress as a worker the way I could, should, or perhaps would have had I been doing that solely. You know, a lot of times I'd be in the power plant going through my paces and the devil, Kevin, would call and, Gomez, come down here, pick us up at the CNN tent. And I'd have to go on the road with those guys. You know, and while it's great that we're all really close and, you know, friends, but I just didn't put 110% into the business, you know, that I probably should have. No, that I definitely should have. And, you know, having, you know, a tanning salon or a sushi restaurant, a big 5,000 square foot sushi restaurant in Ybor City, while I had cherries and, you know, these were big $1 million deals. And, you know, it kind of takes its toll on you. In other words, you know, you're trying to travel around and concentrate on this and this and this, but you're getting reports, you know, you're talking to your management and, you know, it's tough. It's definitely tough.
Yeah. You had your business life and then you had your wrestling life and, you know, they're kind of, you know, it's going two ways at the same time.
Yeah. John, if I could have done it over again, realizing just how fortunate I was in both ways. A lot of people will never own their own businesses. You know, I thank God for that every day. But to be able to break into that business, you know, and it was, I was just so fortunate. And to have, you know, my idols literally welcome me and, you know, become friends with them and be able to travel the world with them. You know, if I could do it over again, yeah, I probably would have figured out a way to divest myself from some of my other businesses and, you know, just solely concentrate on wrestling. Eric paid me good money. You know, I apologized to him because I felt bad about it. He goes, no, Joe, and he couldn't be greater about it. You know, I've gotten to be pretty good friends with Eric. I'll see him this weekend in Chicago, and I look forward to it. You know, if anything, he paid me good money. It's up to me to progress and, you know, maybe train a little more and do this and do the things necessary to become top star. God knows I had examples all around me, from Double A to Stinger to Luger to Flair, you know, that I was tight with. But, you know, that's on me.
You know, it's funny, like, we think about it. Bischoff actually used the theme from, or a theme from Desperado. There's a great scene where he comes around the corner and around the bend, and, you know, he's going to get the guns ready. Mm-hmm. And that's Eric Bischoff's theme. I don't know if you knew that or remember that at all, but for some reason,
he uses
a song from Desperado. That's his, that awesome theme song is from Desperado.
I remember this. I did not know that. I'm gonna mention that to him this weekend when I see him. That's great. Yeah, no, Eric, listen.
Could have been yours.
John, and not being full of myself, but he would tell me, he goes, kid, can't you just get abs? You got $1 million hook. And I'm like, you know, oh, God, I remember Scott Hall just torture me and Kevin trying to help me with, you know, oh, kid, just cut out the carbs. And, yeah, I've got great memories of the time, without a doubt. But, you know, I think everything works out the way it's supposed to, you know, in the grand scheme of things, I guess. I can't complain. I've been truly blessed. I've got unbelievable friends. I've got a daughter that, you know, I've learned what real love is, you know, beautiful 12-year-old girl. She's such a good kid. And I've got friends that, you know, I'm blessed to have. So my years in the business enabled me to, you know, just do things I never dreamed that I would do. And I'm very thankful for it, truly.
What was it like hanging out with Flair and Arn? And over, like, talking about you partying with them. But, like, what is that really like? Is it really 3 a.m. in the morning, him handing out Rolex watches? I mean, what is it like hanging out with those two?
In the day, John, yeah. He is, everything is advertised, and that's why he is an icon. Because he lived his gimmick 24-7. And he still is. John, he's here. Rick and I are best friends. He's here in Tampa. He moved here to Tampa a year ago.
Wow.
So ostensibly he came to find a boat in Sarasota. So he calls me, oh, Joe, I'm going to come down. It was Labor Day, Memorial Day, Labor Day. I'm going to come down. We're going to get a boat. So I took him to my marina where I buy my boats in Sarasota. Introduced him to the guys. Great. He finds a boat, 38-foot Donzi. Loves it. Okay, we're great. We're staying in Sarasota and having a great time. Joe, everybody's too old here. I'm like, what are you talking about, Rick? You're 72. Oh, no. We got to go back to Tampa. So we go to Tampa. He checks into the Marriott Waterside, stays there for 5 months until I finally convince him, Rick, rent a place. You have no idea how much you're spending here at the Marriott. And he would leave for, you know, 3 days, not check out of the room. Oh, no, it's fine. Just leave it here. I'm just like pulling my hair out. So he's got a beautiful, beautiful penthouse there at one of the buildings right there in Channelside. And I'm actually going to see him tomorrow down there at the place called The Battery, a really great bar restaurant down there. Tremendous. And so he's incredibly happy. You know, he and Fifi go kind of back and forth. Wendy, his wife,
yep.
They go back and forth. She's up at Rosemary Beach, which is truly where they got married, which is truly one of the most beautiful beaches in the state of Florida. And he's down here, and he's got his 38-foot Donzi with three 350 horsepower Mercuries on it that goes about 90 miles an hour. It never ceases to scare me out of my wits when he drives. And he's having a great time. You know, he's training with Cena's trainer a couple times a week. You know, we just did that deal in Nashville for his last match that they're still waiting on the pay-per-view numbers, but the house show was tremendous. The merch sales were tremendous. He sold more tickets for that than he did when he had that legendary match with Steamboat in the same building 30 years ago. So that's kind of crazy.
Nuts.
And he's actually doing better than he ever did as a performer. He's got Ric Flair Woo Wings that we're working to spread throughout Florida, that because of my restaurant connections, I told him I'd help. He's got the Woo Drip with the same guy that did Mike Tyson, who he met here, actually. And he's doing Car Shield national commercials. So, you know what? The guy's doing amazing, and he hasn't changed. Now, he goes to bed a lot earlier, given his health concerns, and he's really not out partying, roaring like he used to. But in the day, John, I can't even tell you. I've seen them all, from Piper to Nate to Terry Funk to you name it, to rock and roll stars, to professional athletes of every single sport. No one could take on the boys, I'm telling you. Rick, Knobs, Piper. I mean, oh, the stories are just legendary and just tremendous times. The business has changed so much. But back then, those guys really lived their gimmick. They did.
And with him, too, I think he's got a new Viagra. I forget what the name of it, but there's like a...
He's called Mount Everest.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. Yep.
He just... yeah, no, he's something else. I'll tell you, John, it's amazing. It's amazing. He is... His I guess it would be called the Q rating. It's got to be off the charts. I don't know what it is, but it's got to be. His recognizability factor here. They just asked me to give him to be the Grand Marshal of what we have a parade here called the Gasparilla Parade for a fictitious pirate that supposedly invaded Tampa 100 and some years ago, you know. But it's just a gimmick parade. But it's probably the fourth or fifth largest in the country. Huge. 500,000 people crowded in the downtown streets in Bay Shore, which is the longest uninterrupted sidewalk in the world. You know, along the water there, and it's really a great event. If you get a chance, come on down. But they wanted me to get Rick to be the Grand Marshal, which he agreed to. Batista did it a couple years ago, and yeah, he's just having a great time here. It's like nothing I've ever seen. He's 73 years old. He's got the energy of a 20-year-old. Never seen anything like it.
Crazy. I mean, he really is the Nature Boy, but he is probably more popular than ever, which is insane to think of because of how popular he used to be. But man, it's crazy. The player drip and the rap videos, him showing up at football games, doing the woo, everybody imitating him. He's more popular than ever.
He's truly iconic. You know, one of his robes actually hangs in the Smithsonian Institute. Museum of History. I mean, I'm sorry. He truly is an American treasure, an icon. Nothing ever ceases to amaze me, and he's such a good friend. He's got a heart of gold. He's one of the most generous guys you'll ever meet, and which I'm always haunt him about, trying to curb that somewhat, but just a great guy. And if you would have told me, 15-year-old me, you're going to, you know, be best friends with your hero, you know, I'd be like, yeah, right, okay. You know, but he's just a great guy, and I've had some of the best times of my life with him. I truly, truly have. And we've been there for each other, highs, lows. You know, he's had, you know, quite a few heartbreaking things occur in his life. And, you know, he's gotten through them. He's amazing. Amazing. He should have been dead 7 years ago.
Like your boy, Kevin Sullivan, my buddy too. He always says he's Dracula. Can't get rid of him.
Yeah. that would be the devil. Yes. Kevin is the best. One of the smartest men ever met in the business.
With WCW, like the second time around, did you like Bischoff and me, like initially when you got there, or was there issues?
Yeah, very, John, very charming guy, you know, and I guess from an eyes on thing, you know, and Rick would talk me up and Arn would talk me up. So Eric wanted me, and I had I want to say I worked Brad Armstrong. So how can you have a bad match with him?
Right.
You know, I had a good match coming in. So I think Eric probably thought my prowess was a little more than it really was. So he wanted me. Gave me great money. He's very charming. Oh my God. You know, when he wants to turn it on, he can turn it on with the best of them. You know, Eric's a sharp businessman when it comes to that. And he's a nice guy, you know, but you started to see the cracks, you know, as the times were going great. I mean, for the first year, it was amazing. The crowds, the money, the house shows, the merch sales, everything was just ridiculous. It was a $300 million company. I think maybe 350, but then you started to see the cracks. You know, if somebody didn't want to do a job, they'd go to the devil, Kevin, who was the booker, by all rights. But then if they didn't like what Kevin said, then they'd go to Eric, and then they'd go or use their political connections. So it was just, you would literally see the number one show on cable drawing a 4.8 being rewritten on the fly. And because I traveled with Kevin and Arn and Rick, you know, you would just see Kevin. Kevin had a couple breakdowns, one of them here in Tampa, one of them in Denver, Colorado. And he'll tell you. I mean, it just got to him, you know. You know, he was, and all the ideas he had, everything he did to you know, build the Dungeon of Doom to give Hogan, you know, the opponents that he felt comfortable working with, and you know, the ideas Kevin tried to have to bring young talent, and you know, he'd have to mesh with Eric's ideas, and you know, then Paige, and I felt bad. I don't know how he got through his job the way he did. When you had 90 guys, somebody's got to do a job. But it just seemed like no matter what, what Kevin gave them, you know, Then they try to swerve him and go around him and, you know, see the poor guy rewrite a 2-hour script on the fly. That's a lot of pressure, you know.
Was that just because everybody had too much power backstage or too much influence? Why only do you think that was like that?
Only one guy had the power, and rightfully so, because of what he brought with him, and that's Hulk. You know, he had creative control. I think Macho probably did too. But the other guys had friendships, you know, and I'm not going to get into that, but, you know, top guys that had friendships, perhaps with Eric or perhaps with other people. And so they would use those friendships, and Kevin was always the one that was on the losing end of the stick, even though he knew what was right. Kevin's, you know this, John, you're friends with him.
Yep.
He's a brilliant man. When it comes to the wrestling business, he learned from Eddie Graham. He learned from Vince Sr. And just to ride in the car with Kevin Sullivan was some of the best education you could ever get. That was the best part, and I miss that so much about the business, is the rides in the car. And when you would just hear why he thought of this and why he did this, and amazing. Amazing how smart that man is.
When you look at that, though, that is not good to have that type of backstage turmoil. Like, is that where Bischoff maybe need to step in and really put his foot down? Because, you know, they say in WWF, like, oh, when Vince says it, like, it's happening. You can kind of maybe talk him into it. But is that where kind of there was some, you know, some issues maybe with Bischoff or you know, maybe with even Hulk?
John, absolutely. Listen, with your show, I'm guessing you're the boss of your show. Perhaps you or Tom, but you're the boss of your show. What you say goes. Some a staffer, somebody may have a good idea. Maybe an advertiser, hey, but maybe this, boom, boom, boom. But you're the final say. There's got to be one chief, you know, and I'll use the Indian thing, but, you know, you can't have all chiefs and not enough Indians. And Kevin was supposedly the chief, you know, answering to, Dr. Schiller, or Eric, then Dr. Schiller, but people would go around him. Hulk, I get, because he had creative control, no question. And, you know, he was the mega star and enabled everybody else to make a living and enabled WCW to lead the ratings and then the big turn and everything else. But you just can't go around it. I've literally seen, okay, this is going to be the finish better. And Kevin would give him the finish. And then, not to get into names, but, you know, someone would have a problem with it. And he'd go around Kevin and go to Eric, you know, or go to Hulk, you know, then either Eric or Hulk, you know, brother, maybe we try to do something a little different. Then Kevin would have to come up with a whole other idea, you know, and it's just, you know, in WWE, and you know this, everything is written out weeks in advance. You know, they have a clear idea where they're going to end up 3, 4, 5, 6 months from now. And WCW did too, but it would always change. And I would see those poor guys. Terry Taylor was there. Arn was on the committee for a while, off and on. You know, and those guys would be under the most immense pressure just to have to redo that and to try to get everybody to get along. And, oh, it was horrible. You couldn't have paid me. And I know what they made. You couldn't have paid me to take the jobs. Never.
It's just one of those things where it just seemed like on TV, it's like, oh, this is great. Everything is going well. But behind the scenes, you always hear the turmoil stories of this, you know, Hall and Nash have their own clique. Obviously, Rick has his own clique. Hogan has his own clique. But they all kind of, you know, vying for power and vying for control. Not really a good scenario if there's not one kind of guy stamping it saying, nope, this is exactly what's going on.
Absolutely. And this has been repeated time and time and time again. You have the inmates running the prison. Mm-hmm. And unless you have somebody strong, you know, like I never saw that happen when Ole was there. Now, Ole might not have been the best booker in the world or respected in that regard, but nobody talked back to Ole and said, oh, I have a problem with this. You know, what he said was gospel. You know, and I just, they put Eric in a tough situation. Too many guys with creative control, you know, too many guys making $800,000 a year. You know, it just, you know, it was tough. It was an untenable situation. And I don't know how Kevin handled it as well as he did for as long as he did. But as you know, he had to take a break and go home. He was flipped. By the time it was all said and done, Kevin was flipped.
What did you think about the Hulkster? Did you get along with Hulk?
Great guy. Listen, he's a businessman. Hulk will tell you from step from day one, he's a businessman. You know, and then the thing with Hulk and he and I have respect, you know, I think he respects me because I'm a businessman too. Albeit not with myself like him, you know, he was able to make a cottage industry with himself, you know, unreal. God bless him. But, you know, Hulk's a businessman. He'll tell you, he thought it was the guy who wins wasn't the guy who was the best worker and, you know, won the Lou Thesz Award every year. It's the guy who made the most money. And it's hard to disagree with that, you know. You know, Hulk revolutionized the business. And he's a nice guy. You know, he's had a lot of bad stuff happen to him, too. And he's a lot more, and I see him here, you know, quite a bit. He's out in Clearwater Beach, got a beautiful home there. But, you know, he's just a real spiritual guy, and he's been through a lot. And that's a tough man. You know, he almost died this last one for shoulder surgery, got infected, and it was horrible. But he's got a beautiful new place called Hogan's Beach right there on Mandalay. Beautiful bar restaurant. And he's selling a ton of merch out of there and out of the Hogan store here in Clearwater out in Orlando, too. So, you know, I mean, it's hard to argue with him. You know, he got creative control and he deserved it, you know.
I was just down there a few months ago. And
oh, no
at
way.
The beach, yeah, at the beach shop, man, line going around the place because he was there signing. Yeah, then yeah. I went down and I went to the bar, the Hogan's Hangout, yeah. And I got some Hogan Pilsner. So I was like, wow, this guy is like the king of friggin' Clearwater. I mean, he's the king of wrestling, but I mean, he's a king of Clearwater. Jeez.
Very, very smart man. He's there every Monday night doing the karaoke.
Yep.
He's gotten last. He told me Nick was going to come in and play drums. I think play there on Thursday or something, or DJ. I'm sorry. Maybe it was play drums, but so Nick was coming in on Thursday and Hulk's there every Monday leading the karaoke and he'll have his friends come in. I've gone to Rick a few times and Jimmy Hart will be there when he's in town. You know, Hulk's living his best life. You know, he lives about 1.5 miles from Hogan's Hangout. And, you know, he's right there on Clearwater Beach, gorgeous. You know, he's good. I think he's in a good place.
Did you like the Dungeon of Doom? Just to, you know, think about Hogan and think about you mentioned. Did you like that, though, as far as, like, at that point? Because it's such, like, a cheesy 80s gimmick, but I guess those are the guys he was comfortable working with.
There you go. No, I didn't think it was, you know, it was that 80s cartoon character, you know, like that. But again, this is Kevin's brilliance. Kevin was given Hulk the people he was comfortable working with. And then Hulk was more malleable in that term, you know, more workable. You
right.
know, 'cause Hulk was happy. Hulk knew that he wasn't going to get hurt. You know, and he's working with Tenta. He's working with his best friend at the time, Eddie,
yep.
Brutus.
Yep.
You know, and Kevin's bringing all these larger-than-life characters. And sure, it was comical, but Hulk was happy. And Hulk was making X amount per Nitro and X amount per pay. You know, he was the sacred lamb, whatever, you know. So it's all about making Hulkster happy. And the bottom line, the guy brought the ratings. So, you know, those were some lean times in 94, 95. And then 96 when they had him turn, forget it. I mean, it was crazy. But that was because, you know, Hulk, the biggest name in history, turning heel. Hall and Nash coming over from WWE, you know, and then all the other guys that came over. And eventually, like anything else, you know, you bloated it. Horace Hogan became a member of the NWO and,
right,
you know, stuff like that. All they needed was put me in there. Forget it, you know. So just a little bit too much of everything. And that's how everything works out. You know, it's always going to run its course. And I think we probably could have stayed on top had the merger not happened. You know, unfortunately, Eric was at wit's end because he was burnt out. You know, he's trying to, you know, make the right business decisions. But again, he's trying to make everybody happy, too, just like Kevin. You know, it goes downhill. So those guys did an amazing job, I thought, considering it was kind of like a one-man show. You know, Kevin was trying to book. And you know, John, he's told you the stories. I don't just tell you. I mean, I felt so bad for him. I mean, he was ashen. You know, sometimes he would just be ashy. He'd come up with a great finish and a great angle. It doesn't work for me, brother.
Right.
You know, and then you have to start over from scratch. I don't know how he did it. You know?
He always says, creative control, brother. Creative control. He always says that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And if they would just listen to Kevin, you know this, John. He is a genius. He has a genius mind for the business. And, you know, and again, he learned from some of the greatest minds, you know, Eddie Graham, Vince Sr., you know, and Kevin's like a sponge. He absorbs everything. You know, he's quiet. He listens, but he doesn't miss a thing. His mind's always turning. Very, very, very smart man. Real estate. He's done phenomenally well in real estate, you know, after his wrestling career is over. Kevin's a very, very savvy man and knows every sport. Statistics and everything. He'll beat you in everything. And I thought I was a pretty big baseball buff. Oof, Kevin's the best.
Oh, yeah. He knows his stuff. It's funny. He always said, like, it was tough sometimes dealing with Hogan, creative control, you know, trying to get certain things across. If he doesn't want to do certain things, he's not going to do it. But he always said, he tells his daughter and stuff, you know, obviously when she was younger, when she would go to bed, thank God when you go to sleep tonight that Hulk Hogan exists. Because that's why we're living in this place. Yeah.
That's right. He said everybody should get on their hands and knees and say a prayer to God and thank Hulk Hogan for letting us live like this. And I agree. Hulk Hogan was end all be all, you know, and what he did for the business for WCW, it was lightning. Boom. And I was there that night and you could just see it. And it was amazing. Now, there was other big players in there. Hall and Nash and never discount. Rey Mysterio and the lightweights and Juventud and those and Eddie Guerrero and Dean Malenko and those lightweight guys that would draw the ratings and really get the fans going, you know, and then they'd see the big guys, the stars. But, you know, you can never, ever discount the work rate that the smaller guys, lightweights, cruiserweights, you know, and it was really a great collection of talent. WCW at the time had the greatest collection of talent, I think, in the history of the business. You know, guys like, and they weren't even being used. Bobby Eaton, one of the greatest workers ever. Arn Anderson, top five for me. Barry Windham, you know, Ric Flair, Kurt Hennig. I mean, maybe a little bit past their prime, but still just tremendous workers. Oh, you know, Macho. I mean, the list was just incredible. But again, that's a bloated payroll. That's a lot of money out there. You know, the company went from, gosh, $350. I want to say it was valued at $350 or something, and Vince bought it for less than $3 million for intellectual property. It's unreal.
Insane. Just insane, especially given the light of what we found out with Vince paying for other stuff. You know, recently it's like, wow, that's what you pay for WCW? Jesus.
That doesn't even cover a good weekend in Cancun. You're right, John.
And it's funny, like Hogan had said, like if he knew like that he could sell DVDs or whatever, he would have just bought it for $3 million, $4 million, you know. You know what I mean? And then he would own the rights to it. Just
and
crazy.
You know what, John? That's a great point. I'm surprised Hulkster didn't, because that's one shrewd, savvy businessman.
Yeah.
Genius. Absolute genius too. And it absolute genius.
That's crazy. They had
brand and everything. Genius.
Absolutely. But it's crazy. Bischoff had a deal for $65 million with Fusion Media, but it had to stay on the programming, and they rather take the WWF deal because they don't have to be on the programming anymore, which is just, I mean,
they just
mind-boggling.
On there. When Vince, when Ted merged, that was it. It was over. And it's sad because that ended a 30-year association of wrestling?
Yep.
Because Ted would always say, well, he told Rick, not me, of course, but he told Rick his granny loved wrestling and he loved wrestling and it was cheap programming and he'll always have wrestling as long as he has the Superstation, you know? So unfortunately, but from the ashes of that come other things, you know, it's given AEW a chance to go up. Tony Khan's doing, you know, a great job there, I think. And there'll be other ones that come up, more independence, you know, where guys are getting more opportunity to work. You know, Fandango called me the other night. He's with NWA. With Tyrus, I talked to both those guys. They were happy as heck. Billy Corgan, I guess, is a great owner. The schedule's light. They're able to be, you know, there once, twice a month maybe, and they're able to schedule themselves to do independence. So financially, they're not missing any money that they were making in WWE, and they're picking their own schedule. They're happy as heck.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny with AEW, though. AOL Time Warner with WCW kind of, if you really look at it, I mean, they killed WCW. Yes. It looks like Discovery with this new deal is almost not killing AEW, but it almost, you're hearing rumors that the same thing could happen all over again.
Yeah, I heard that too. But I also heard Tony was getting a new deal.
I hope so. Yeah.
I do too. But I heard it was big money, like $135 million.
Wow.
And I like what Tony does. I don't know if you noticed this, but when Cody had that tremendous dog collar match with John, God rest his soul, they had Hammer there. And they were referencing his dog collar match with JYD, which, of course, was one of the most legendary, you know, dog collar
matches. With Piper, yeah, with Piper.
Oh, with Piper, I apologize. Thank you.
Yeah.
And it was nice because they had Hammer dressed up in a suit, you know, and he stood up, took a little bow, and acknowledged fans. And that's how you should treat a legend like that. I love the way, you know, Tony Khan has found a place for, you know, he has DDP on all the time, but Tully Blanchard, you know, and he just treats a legend, Jake the Snake. You know, I love the way that he has reverence for the real legends of our sport, you know, in the business. And I think that's awesome, you know.
Yeah, he definitely respects the legends. Double A, Taz, I mean, all the guys, all the legendary guys he gives jobs to. Yeah, for sure.
And I love to see that, and I love to see him create jobs for the guys. He's running into some of the same problems, though, with the bloat. You know, I saw oh, gosh. He lived at one of my rentals for years when he was in WWE, I'm sorry. Brian Cage. You know, Brian's, I thought, hey, man, are you hurt? You know, I saw him at Rick's deal in Nashville. I said, man, are you okay? I haven't seen you on TV in a while, you know. But again, because of the numbers, you know, they start, stop, you know. And Brian's perfectly healthy. I thought he was injured, you know, because I hadn't seen him in months on TV. And the kid looks amazing. So, you know, AEW is starting to get in that number crunch, too, where they just keep hiring talent.
Yep.
You know, but I think they're starting another TV show, I heard.
Really?
Yeah, another one, yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man, I mean, good for them if they're going to do that. That's great.
Yeah, listen, he's got to have 150 guys under contract. I mean.
Yes, at least.
Yeah, so, unfortunately. You know, he's well backed. So as long as he keeps getting the contracts and, you know, the house shows are drawing, and I think his merch is doing really well too. So I love to see that.
Going back to WCW, why did you leave WCW? I guess it was somewhere around 99. It's kind of like 97. You didn't really wrestle much in 98, but you ended up leaving in 99. Was the contract up? Did you get released, or what happened at the end?
Contract was up. And, at that time, I just, you know, I had other things going on here, and at that time, it just wasn't conducive. Everything was really, you know, they had the Thunder thing going on, and it was really pretty fragmented then. And mind you, and I'm so flattered, Kevin was so good to me. Kevin and Macho came to Sushan 7th and offered me a job. There was a brief period there where Kevin was given the book again. In 99. Do you remember that?
Yes. Yep.
It didn't last long because it was just, you know, again, he was literally under assault on everywhere you could turn, but they turned back to Kevin again, you know, maybe to try to recapture the glory, whatever. And he offered me a job again, but I had some other issues that I'll be candid about that I didn't think would fare well for the company for me to go back to.
Ah, okay. Personal issues?
legal.
Oh, okay.
Legal. Not personal. I've never been a, you know, a substance guy. Never tried any. Never been a painkiller guy. Not even really a drinker. But some relationships that I had in the past and growing up in Tampa, and Tampa has a long storied history, you know, came back to bite me, and some poor decisions on my part, 100% my part, and paid dearly for it. But learned a great lesson. So
you almost came back then after that.
I had the opportunity to, yeah. And Rick and Arn at the time were in WWE. And Rick had said, oh, Joe, let's just get you a job here, blah, 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 blah. I don't know work rate, whether I could have cut it, to be quite honest. But I said, Rick, I can't because I have this impending issues coming up here that I had to deal with. But I really appreciated them, and I really appreciated Macho and Kevin coming to see me.
Were you surprised? Obviously, you're gone at this point. Were you surprised, though? We were kind of joking around about Vince buying WWE. Were you just, like, surprised that it was over just like that? Because You guys were number one at one point. I mean, people say 83 weeks. It was more like 2 years. It was like 104 weeks, really.
You're right. Yeah. I think anybody that spent any appreciable length of time there, you know, as you know, you've had, 1,000 episodes or 600 episodes you've done?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So probably even more than that if I add them all up. But I lost count, so I try to add them up. But, yeah, it was a lot.
Yeah, well, you've created history. You've created, as you say, an empire there. So when you've put something together that was your baby and it was your dream and it was your passion and you love what you do, and for it to end so suddenly like that, you know, you're just kind of like, wow, you know, you just can't imagine it happening. You know, I can remember being hired on the 13th floor. I believe it was at North Tower. I can't recall. But, you know, just wishing maybe that, you know, I didn't take it as much for granted in those special times, you know, having lunch with Gordon Solie and him drinking five martinis in the span of lunch, you know, and just all the special times that I had there and the great people that I met and the friendships that I was able to accrue, you know, and yeah, and then you just, it's gone. You just can't imagine. It was a monolith, you know, it was a $300-400 million company. And through, you know, poor decisions, you know, merger, all the other things just conspired against it. You never imagine it.
Crazy. Just think about how great they were. I mean, they saved wrestling. If you think about it, with Hogan going there, it was doing good, but WWF sucked. Really. I mean,
without a question, they had Vince on the ropes.
Yeah. Yep. Not that they sucked. They're totally, but they were not great. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, you knock Eric and I, that's what I tell everybody. Hey, listen, knock these guys all you want. They changed the business.
Yep.
The whole business. Eric, Hulk, Kevin, everybody that was the top guy there and involved in the booking committee and then the executive decisions, they changed the whole business. Unreal. So, you know, and yes, it was on top for 2 years, but you would see the cracks just because I was privy to it. Because I traveled with those guys. I stayed with those guys. Unfortunately, I was with Kevin, you know, here in Tampa and in Denver, Colorado, you know, and you know what I'm talking about. Yep. And it broke my heart because he was somebody who was so, he's given his life to that business and loves the business, really does. And was a good friend to me and would mentor me and try to help me any way that he could, you know, without being deferential or whatever. But yeah, it was just sad to see, you know, him have to go through that. Yeah, because he took it very deeply, you know, all the pressures and yeah, it was just bad. It really was. Because everybody worked so hard to get there. I can remember we'd get in the car. What was the ratings? They'd all want to know the ratings. Boom, they'd find out. First it was a 2A, then it was 2.9. I remember when it first broke 3 the first time. You know, and everybody was just excited. It was that camaraderie, like a real team, you know, like a football team climbing the ratings, you know, and it was just really a great time. Everybody's making money and having fun, and the crowds are unreal. You know, it was like, I always say the Beatles, you know, but that's how it was almost, you know, traveled to these college stadiums and the youth that were so into the show and you know, getting everybody's mannerisms and catchphrases. Oh, it was amazing. It really was amazing. And like I said, I'm just honored that I was able to even be there. So.
Great times from WWE for sure. But as we hit the wind down, we head towards the finish. Give me just some of your favorite matches or maybe favorite opponents. Just a bunch of guys that, you know, you just love working with.
Brad Armstrong. Amazing. My God. You know, Rock and Roll Express, getting a team with them, amazing. You know, watching Ricky Morton, the way he sold, and just watching Ricky Steamboat. I mean, you just sit there and like, is he really doing that? It's just, those guys were so good and so smooth. It was just amazing. You know, and being fortunate enough to wrestle the Horsemen. Oh, and I remember, you know, circling around the ring, let's see if you're all they say, kid. And I was just like, oh, God, I'm going to wrestle Ric Flair. You know, I wrestled Arn for the TV title, broke his finger. On a kick to this day, never lets me hear the end of that. But, Chief, worst match I ever had in my life. And you know, Arn, maybe the funniest man in the history of the business.
Yeah, he's hilarious. Yep.
Oh my God, John. I can't even tell you. But, you know, just being with those guys, John, imagine, you know, you're Bob Uecker or whoever yours, Kurt Gowdy, you know, whoever your hero may be in broadcasting, made you want to pick up a microphone. You know, and them, like I said, you know, I shared Christmas with them, 4 or 5 Christmases, very special, you know, brings tears to my eyes, you know, making me a part of their family. I just spent the whole night, I just sat backstage and watched the matches with Arn's wife, Erin, and caught up with her, and it was so nice. She's such a wonderful person, and yeah, to me, that's the thing. And getting to know a guy like Ricky Steamboat, literally one of the best human beings I've ever met in my life. Just unbelievable, man. Those are the things I take from it. You know, I was lucky to be there. Okay. And whether or not I should have done better, that's conjecture. But Ricky Steamboat said the nicest thing to me, and I always appreciate this and actually treasure it. He said, "Joe, you know, it's a shame." He goes, "You weren't a Hall of Famer in the ring, but you're a Hall of Famer in life." And that means the world to me, coming from a guy like him.
Wow, so nice.
The friendships that I've accrued and made and the respect that I get, you know, as a job guy, as maybe a glorified job guy who's on contract. But, you know, that means a lot to me. And I've always just treated people the way I want to be treated. And, you know, I've been able to just have a lot of great friends in the business, even the younger guys now that, you know, rented my properties and I gave some guidance to and try to help out here in Florida, from Sheamus to Drew McIntyre to, you know, Kofi and Big E and all the guys, you know, and Fandango's, you know, still one of my very, very dearest friends on earth. You know, so that's the thing about the business. You know, you just meet so many great guys and you share so many good times with them. And those are the memories you always have.
Man, like, you just think about it, 2 separate contracts for WCW. So you could say, you know, you were a job guy, whatever, but still you had contracts working for, you know, the biggest company at one point in the world.
John, listen, I'm not blowing my own horn, but Kevin would tell me, you know, kid, you're number one draft pick. You know, you're big, you're a good looking kid, you know, the hair, the look, blah, blah, blah. And it was just me, you know, I should have taken it upon myself. You know, the way Paige did. You know, and Paige was such a great guy. And Paige and I knew each other here in Florida. And he would tell me, come to the power plant, Chief. You know, the way he would film himself and everything. And, you know, 9 out of 10 times, Arn or the devil would call and say, Chief, come pick us up. You're on the road with us. Guys, I got to be in the power. Chief, get down here, Chief. Come get us. We'll be ready in 20 minutes. Okay. You know, now that's a cop out, you know, but I still should have been, you know, more attuned to it, you know, and put 150% into that, you know, and not spread myself so thin, without a question. That would be my one great lament, if I had one. Everything works out great. I'm the luckiest guy on earth, John. I thank God, you know, being remembered by guys like you and having me show, I'm flattered, truly. But my one great lament would have been, man, maybe I should have put more into it, you know, in terms of effort. I guess the lure of running around with the horsemen with Nature Boy was too much, and Barry Windham and all those guys, because I had some of the best times of my life. Never forget them.
So what are you up to today? You got all your businesses going on. You still got John, real estate.
John, I'm the luckiest man on earth. I got a beautiful, for lack of a better term, wife with a 12-year-old daughter. I've got the best friends in the world. I'm here, and maybe you can see in the background, beautiful Tampa Bay.
Oh yeah,
in the water here, you know, right by the causeway there. You know, I've got a funding company where we do pre-settlement funding, where we advance funds to clients that have been involved in auto accidents. I've been able to help people save their homes, their cars. You know, my rates are a flat 50% rate. I don't compound it like some of the other companies, which sounds high, I know, but they do it 68% a year compounded. So that, believe me, that's offensive. So that business has just boomed, taken off like you couldn't imagine, because obviously the personal injury business is big in Florida. We're one of 13 states that are PIP states, personal injury protection. I did well in real estate because fortunately I've got a very dear friend of mine, Boney Bonifacio Tejador, who's a realtor, and would get on me before I had my daughter. I'd be at the casino, Hard Rock here, playing and get my brains kicked in. And he would just say, "Are you a masochist? Listen, buy real estate, you know, blah, blah, blah." And I thought, yeah, a realtor tell me buy real estate. But I finally listened to him. My first place was a 3-3 beach condo I still own in Reddington. Flair stayed there when he went to rehab. and Haku just actually stayed in this past weekend, his family. We had a great time.
Wow.
And if you ever come down here, call me up. You're welcome to stay, brother.
Awesome. Thank you.
But that was my first one. Quadrupled up on that one. And not that I'm smart, but I listen to people that are smarter than me. Surround yourself with smart people and just listen. You know, the rental properties I have here in West Tampa, the areas that I grew up in going to high school at Jefferson, they've quadrupled in price and they're all rented. So, you know, how can you mess up that? So I've been very, very blessed just having such good friends and for once being smart enough to listen, even though I didn't listen to Arn or Scott Hall, who was one of the best guys ever too. You know, kid, just get in shape, lose the derby, he would always tell me. So I guess I did listen later in life in some aspects, and it turned out well for me. Like I said, I think God or whatever you may believe in, you know, it all works out for the best. And I've been truly, truly blessed. But, you know, before I got in the wrestling business, I would be, I guess I was what you would consider over. You know, I worked at all the, you know, top bars here, bouncing, you know, security at the concerts and everything. So, you know, just, I think that's why I didn't really take wrestling that. You know what I mean? I was always just a very lucky guy. You know, I played football in high school, played football in college. You know, so my life's always been very, very fortuitous. But that would be my one great lament, that I didn't reach potential that other people saw in me. They, you know, hired me twice at, yes, one of the biggest companies in the world at what I did. But then Eric would tell me all the time, kid, you got $1 million look. Kids, just get abs. Like, yeah, I'm trying, Eric. I mean, John, I had lipo done, right? Very dear friend of mine in town, Dan Diaco, great plastic surgeon. Did lipo on me. I thought that gave me carte blanche. I went back to him after they took the bandages off and everything. He goes, Joe, I took 12 pounds of fat off of you. He goes, you've gained 16. How did you do that? I'm like, oh, damn, shit, I don't know. You know, so some things aren't meant to be. And this Indian wasn't meant to have abs. So, but you know what, John? Just like I said, thank you for having me on your show. Being remembered by you, it's truly flattering. And being able to share, you know, my memories of a great time. I had a great time. And thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And thank you for all the time. I appreciate it. Great interview. Thank you again.
And everybody out there, this is a heck of a show, and I'll always be loyal to it. Thanks so much, John.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron, and also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies, brother.